Welcome to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word. I have waited so long to say this, Rick, at least since October 7th. We're back in Israel, and we are here to present the program this week live with interviews with our good friends, our broadcast partners, Rick, and I'm looking forward to at least examining what we are seeing here as we're back in the land of Israel.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. As you just said, it's been great to be back in the land. It's been great to visit old friends, but also to experience firsthand what is taking place here in the land, to see for ourselves with our own eyes and to reconnect back with Israel.
I'm looking forward to our interviews today. Of course, our broadcast partners, Ken Timmerman, David Dolan, very important stuff on events happening around the world. Winky Madad and our good friend, our Navy SEAL that's here with us on the trip, plus a Maine state trooper who trains canine dogs in Maine. He's here with us on the trip also. Let's get started with the program, Rick, with our first, Ken Timmerman.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Ken Timmerman with us. He is our expert on geopolitical affairs. He's an author, an analyst. You can find out more about him by going to KenTimmerman.com. Ken, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
Well, Ken, the big news story this week, and the first story that I would like for you to comment on, is the death of the Iranian president in what looks like a helicopter accident there. Can you let us know the details of the situation?
Well, first, let me just cut to the chase. The death of Ebrahim Raisi, the Iranian president, will have absolutely zero impact on anything of importance inside Iran or outside of Iran. He was never an elected president to start with. He was selected by the supreme leader, and his replacement will also be selected by the supreme leader. They are having so-called elections on June 28th. But, you know, Rick, all of my Iranian friends call these selections. They kind of put an S in brackets in front of election. It is a selection, not a popular election. And everybody inside understands that. You know, in the latest elections, so-called elections for the Assembly of Experts in their second round, something like, I think it was 5 or 8% of people actually voted. That's just astonishing. The Supreme Leader has said anything less than 50 or 60% participation shows that people have lost faith in their democratic system. Clearly, Iranians have lost faith that in this pretense of democracy that they have in their country. And I don't expect that they're going to show up in droves on June 28th to replace Raisi either.
Well, Ken, well, that's the big picture. Let's look at some of the things that have taken place around the situation. At his funeral, Iran's Khomeini tells visiting Hamas chief that Israel will one day be eliminated. The plan is going to go on as it has been, isn't it?
Yes. And let's not forget that when they tell you they want to murder you, you need to take them seriously. They're not joking. So the Iranian regime wants to destroy every Jew in the world, because every Jew is now considered a Zionist. By the way, most Americans are considered Zionists by the regime in Tehran as well. So we need to believe him. Here's what he actually said to Ismail Haniyeh, the Hamas leader who is based in Qatar, supposedly a U.S. ally, right? But he's based in Qatar, lives in luxury, has bank accounts worth billions of dollars, and we do nothing about him. So Haniyeh says, quote, "The divine promise to eliminate the Zionist entity will be fulfilled, and we will see the day when Palestine will rise from the river to the sea." And Haniyeh responds, "Oh yes, inshallah." Yes, let us hope that this takes place as you say. Look, it's for real. They were behind the October 7th attacks. The Iranian regime was behind them. They're still financing Hamas. They're providing political and diplomatic cover to them. We need to understand that. The Israelis understand that. They understand that the Iranian regime is the driving force behind Hamas.
They certainly do. And for them, it's an existential matter. Well, some more stories coming out about Iran. And we look at the State Department under former President Barack Obama. They blocked the FBI from arresting supporters of Iran's nuclear program. This is indicative of the way the former Obama administration handled Iran, and somewhat similar to the way the Biden administration handles Iran. Can you talk about this a little bit?
This is an extraordinary story, Rick, and we would not know it if it weren't for a couple of very courageous FBI whistleblowers, agents, you know, field agents at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who went to Senator Grassley in Congress and provided copies of emails, internal emails in the FBI, unclassified, redacted to have certain names removed. But these emails reveal that FBI officials were trying to arrest 8 Iranians in separate cases for procuring equipment for Iran's nuclear weapons program and their missile programs in the United States. This was in 2015, 2016, and they were all set to arrest these people, and the State Department intervened and blocked it. The State Department, and in one of the emails, the FBI supervisor said, "What the heck? Why is the State Department getting involved in this? This is not a matter for them." And yet they did. They intervened. There was a meeting described in other emails that Senator Grassley released this past week that show a meeting between John Kerry, then Secretary of State, and Loretta Lynch. You know, most of us think of Loretta Lynch as Obama's toady in the Department of Justice, as somebody who, just like Merrick Garland, she would sic federal prosecutors on the enemy of the administration. But here she was meeting with Kerry to press these arrest warrants against the Iranians, and Kerry just brusquely brushed her off and got up at the end of the meeting and stalked off with all of his people without even shaking her hand or saying goodbye. And that shocked. You can read the shock in these emails. So this is a big deal, Rick. And it shows again that John Kerry was fulfilling the agenda of the Iranian regime, and not just with the nuclear talks themselves. We already knew that. We knew that the nuclear talks, all the concessions he made were concessions that were demanded by Tehran. Now we're learning he was also acceding to their demands to actually intervene in U.S. law enforcement prosecutions. It's an amazing story, and I'm very glad that this finally came out, and it's really thanks to those whistleblowers and to Senator Grassley in the Senate.
Well, certainly a story that we need to be looking at, especially during an election year as this is, as we look at who is going to be leading the administration going forward. Well, one final question. Initially, you said that this whole situation, that things are not going to change. President Raisi died. We looked at the alliance between Russia, China, and Iran, something that we talk about often on this program. That's going to continue and may even strengthen after this.
Yes. And again, it will not be affected because Raisi was not in charge. This is being run by the supreme leader, by the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC leaders. And it is a strategic decision to have forged this alliance with Russia and China. The Iranian regime is now guaranteeing China's oil supplies for 40 years out. They have built a new rail line, which is the last link bringing Russia right down to the warm seas. Rick, just so our listeners understand this is something that the Tsar was seeking. You know, this anybody who studied European history in the 18th or 19th century will recollect the Russian move to the warm seas. It's why they were fighting with Britain in Afghanistan, the so-called Great Game. And Russia has long sought to reach the warm seas, either the Indian Ocean or the Persian Gulf. Now, with this regime in Tehran, they have finally achieved that 300-year-old dream, that strategic goal. Russia is now in the Strait of Hormuz. They've reached the warm seas, and there's not a heck of a lot we can do about it. And there's nothing that the Biden administration did to prevent this from happening. And they could have done something 2 years ago.
Another interesting story that came across this week, Germany's leader Scholz echoes Macron's call for a deeper European military cooperation. This is a somewhat changing dynamic there in Europe, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, Rick. We talked about this a bit last week, and remember Macron was saying that he wanted to extend the French nuclear umbrella to encompass the EU, to defend the EU. And now the German Chancellor Scholz is saying, okay, he was a bit on the fence last week, but he's saying, okay, yeah, that's maybe a good idea. We'd like to see the French nuclear umbrella protecting Europe as well. But he does not want to make it a European force, which is what Macron wants. Macron wanted to become a European nuclear umbrella, period. Scholz is still saying, no, we have to enhance our transatlantic cooperation, which means NATO. So Scholz has taken one step towards Macron while taking another step in the other direction towards Washington. And so for a little cookie, Rick, the measuring cup is half empty. Remember, he was saying that without this integrated Euro defenses outside of NATO, that, quote, Europe could die. This is just like what he was saying with COVID when he was saying we are at war. Little cookie has always been a bit of a drama queen, Rick. I guess that's what happens when you marry the teacher.
Well, Ken, we'll continue to look at that European military cooperation, but let's move on. A couple more stories. China threatening Taiwan with war games. Can you give us the details on that?
Well, that's right, Rick. You had new war games by the Chinese encircling Taiwan. They were really from all sides of the island. You had 15 Chinese naval ships, 16 Coast Guard vessels, dozens of aircrafts, live fire exercises with missiles at targets at sea off the coast of Taiwan. This is something, Rick, that we predicted right here on these airwaves 3 weeks ago. The Chinese are calling them strong punishment for the separatist acts of Taiwan. And by the way, what they're referring to is the election of the new president, President Lai Ching-te. He took office just 3 days before these war games started. So it was a very clear correlation. New president in Taiwan, who is against Taiwan becoming part of communist China, China retaliates with military exercises. So I think we're going to see more of this. There have been really daily incidents for the past 4 years, but this was a big one. Not as big as when Nancy Pelosi came to Taiwan in August of 22, but nevertheless, these were significant exercises, and I think we're going to see more of them.
So many different things taking place throughout the world. They're all interconnected. Ken, as always, thank you so much for being our guide as we look at geopolitics. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Rick, and God bless.
Ken Timmerman, great job as always, Ken. Rick and I are in Israel this week. Hope you enjoy the program, and here are some of the things of what we're experiencing while we're here. We've got to take a break, and when we come back, our Middle East news update, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi died Sunday in a helicopter crash, an announcement that sent shockwaves across the Muslim world. Iran's foreign minister and other officials were also killed. The Iran government has scheduled an election within 50 days for Raisi's replacement. Lana Silk, CEO of Transform Iran, says,
"You would think that that would potentially change many things in the country. The reality is that the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, is literally the supreme leader of Iran and controls near enough everything. You could argue that all other extensions of government and authority are an extension of his will. And he has now already come officially and made a statement and said nothing is going to change."
Pray more Iranians finally see Christ. And the school year in Kenya is only about halfway through, beginning in January and ending in October. But for some Kenyan kids, the school year may already be over. Major flooding across the country damaged at least 62 primary schools. So when other schools were reopening last week, 15,000 students from destroyed schools had nowhere to go.
And then if water flooded classrooms, that's even worse, because already just the issue of each child having their own workbook or sitting at a desk meant for two and there's three at it, all those hardships that are there every day with or without floods.
That's Steve Holman with Kenya Hope, a ministry that supports widows and children economically and spiritually. Pray for Kenyans impacted by flooding to know God's comfort. Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. This month, Sat7, a Christian satellite television ministry to the region, offers a free 7-day prayer guide that provides specific ways to pray and tell the stories of Christians who can't freely worship. Get yours when you click the banner ad at Mission Network News. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today Radio, the program that looks at current events in the light of Bible prophecy. This is the portion of our program where we look at the Middle East news update, news coming out of the Middle East in general, but Israel in particular. To do that, we have a journalist with over 30 years of experience with us, Dave Dolan. Dave, thank you for being with us today.
I'm glad to join you. I wish it were in Israel, Rick.
Yes, certainly. We are talking to you from Israel. And before we went on the air, we were reminiscing about your time in Israel and our shared experiences. And you've been through many experiences similar to what Israel's going through right now. But let's get started there, David, as we continue to get an update on Israel. Give us the latest on what is taking place here in the Middle East, but Israel in particular.
Well, Rick, the biggest news of the week actually wasn't in the Middle East, but coming out of Europe, out of The Hague, where we had the ruling on Tuesday that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Gallant, along with three Hamas leaders, were considered war criminals and should be arrested. Of course, President Biden in the States and other world leaders denounced the equation of Hamas leaders with duly elected Israeli leaders, but nevertheless, court did that. And then on Friday, yesterday, we had the court rule that Israel must immediately halt its military operations in Rafah in the south of Gaza. Now, of course, the international court has no means to enforce such a ruling, but it's expected now to go to the UN. And the question will be, will the United States veto a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire and halt to all the fighting? So far, the Biden administration has vetoed similar earlier resolutions. But now that this is based on the World Court of Justice and the UN and blah, 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 they may well either take a neutral stand, just abstain, which would allow it to pass, or vote for it even is possible. So we'll just see what happens there, Rick. But that's been the biggest news of the week. Of course, the fighting goes on in Gaza, again, operations in Rafah, but mostly in the eastern half of that city where Hamas has its main headquarters. The IDF said it killed two senior Hamas leaders during the week, Rick, including the man in charge of the border fences all around Gaza. And the IDF said he was responsible for preventing Palestinians from fleeing certain zones in the Gaza Strip to safer zones. They were physically preventing their own people using them as human shields. And we had more fighting up in the north in Lebanon, more heavy shelling coming from Hezbollah during the week. Kiryat Shmona, this main city up there, was hit again. And sadly, we had the recovery of three bodies of three of the hostages. One was known to be dead. He was a 59-year-old Michel Nissenbaum. He was originally from Brazil, came with his family when he was 13 and lived in Sderot, right next to the Gaza Strip. He went on the morning of October 7th. His son called him and said, you've got to come and get, or his son-in-law, who was in the military at a base. He had his daughter with him over that holiday weekend, 4-year-old daughter. He was shielding her under his desk as they were being fired upon from outside by Hamas. And the grandfather went to try to get her, rescue her, and his car was attacked and set on fire. So it was assumed he was dead. But the other two, one was the boyfriend of the female hostage from Germany, Shani Luke, whose body was found last week. This was a 30-year-old joint Mexican-French tourist. He wasn't an Israeli. He was just her boyfriend visiting Israel. And he was thought to have been abducted, but he was killed and then his body abducted. And 42-year-old Hanan Yabloka, who was from Tel Aviv, a father of two girls, he was at the festival. It was thought that he had been kidnapped alive. But again, all three bodies were discovered this week by the IDF in the north of the Gaza Strip in Jabalia, north of Gaza City. So we have decreasing number of known living hostages. Rick, it's really probably not much more than 100 now. And really, we don't even know that most of those are not deceased already.
David, one of the things that we've noticed as we've been traveling around Israel, we haven't seen much of the impact of the war per se. That is all kind of contained in that area down there. And it's life as usual in the rest of the country, except when it comes to the hostage situation. You see those faces plastered all over the place on overpasses, in the stores. Everywhere you go, you see the images of these hostages. So this country is captivated by that. You talked about that. And in the light of this International Court of Justice, so we know October 7th took place. We know it was a terrible attack against the Israeli people. Now you have Israel trying to do what they can to prevent this from happening again. Not revenge per se, but they have to act against Hamas. If Hamas is going to perpetrate an attack like that, then an international court of justice stepping in. Can you tell us what are the actual ramifications? Is this just a symbolic gesture by them? Or can you tell us what is the next step? What does Israel have to worry about?
Well, it has to worry about the countries that would issue a warrant for arrest for Netanyahu or Gallant. This is the prime minister and the defense minister of Israel. They often are in Europe, various European capitals. They are in the United States. Netanyahu's being invited by the Republicans to come and speak before Congress again. So if in Germany, originally on Tuesday, we had an official say, yes, if he comes to Germany, he will be arrested, Netanyahu, because we abide by international law. Well, yesterday, the chancellor said that, no, we probably wouldn't do that. So we'll see. But it certainly crimps their movements around the world. And Rick, it's just so absurd when you think that Vladimir Putin invaded his neighbor and has killed tens of thousands of people, indiscriminately shelling apartment buildings, deliberately hitting civilian areas and infrastructure, et cetera, which Israel is trying to avoid as much as possible. And Israel didn't initiate the war. This was the worst massacre of Jews since World War II. And somebody pointed out the Court of Justice, one Israeli leader on Friday said, the Court of Justice was set up as a result of the Holocaust. It was set up and then taken over by the UN to prosecute war criminals from Nazi Germany. And now, 76 years later, Israel is being prosecuted for war crimes of a war that they didn't start against a group that clearly defines itself as after the genocide of the Jewish people. They want all Jews out of Israel entirely. So Israel's not committing genocide. It's Hamas that wants to commit genocide, that deliberately attacks civilian areas, that was shooting at four-year-old girls deliberately, et cetera. You know, this is an absurd situation, and it just shows how upside down the world is. But you and I know the book. We know that in the last days, the entire world, it says, will come against Israel. Israel will stand alone except for one, and that is the God of Israel on her side. And that's the good news. But difficult days indeed. And of course, we also had Spain and Ireland and Sweden announced during the week that they are recognizing a Palestinian state. Well, you know, it doesn't exist. They had a statelet in Gaza. What did they use it for? They used it to attack Israel all the time. So, you know, a two-state solution is not realistic at this time. But relations with those European countries are strained as well. So Israel is losing the PR war. Hamas knew they would. Iran knew they would. They know that the Jewish people love life. They knew that if they just took a few hundred hostages, that would be the main focus of most Israelis, and the demands for no attack against Hamas would grow and this sort of thing. Everything that's happening was predictable and sad. But again, the God of Israel has it all in his control.
He certainly does, David, and that is something that we can take comfort in, but it certainly does seem to be playing out exactly as Hamas intended it to be. Well, we've only got about a minute left. I had one more question. You mentioned that the Republicans invited Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to come speak to Congress. We look at the fading support of President Biden and his administration towards Israel. This is going to be a big issue come the presidential elections, isn't it?
Yes, it's already a big issue. We know that Joe Biden has lost hundreds of thousands of Arab votes. The polls are showing, particularly in Michigan and a couple other very important swing states. But he's also in danger of losing Jewish votes if he comes on too hard against Israel. So I'm hoping that at the UN, the White House will do the right thing and veto this ridiculous resolutions against Israel by the World Court. Who are they to pontificate against a small state that has enemies all around it, that has a large enemy in Iran, that states clearly with its proxies, the destruction of Israel is our goal? How can Israel not respond to that? The Jewish people were almost wiped out in Europe just less than 100 years ago. They can't allow that to happen in the Jewish state today.
You've been listening to Dave Dolan, our journalist, when it comes to looking at what is taking place in the Middle East, not only a journalist, but also a student of Bible prophecy. Dave, as always, we appreciate you letting us know, providing insight and perspective to the situation here in Israel. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Rick, and Shabbat Shalom.
We're going to take a break right now on Prophecy Today, but when we come back, we'll have Winky Medad, the Legacy Series with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, and we're going to talk to a few of the fellow travelers that have been with us here in the land of Israel. That's all right ahead, right here on Prophecy Today Radio.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. The International Criminal Court is attempting to put Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in the dock alongside Hamas terrorists like Yahya Sinwar. The ICC issued tandem arrest warrants on Monday, a move strongly condemned by the United Kingdom, Italy, and the U.S., saying it's a false moral equivalent. Todd Nettleton with the Voice of the Martyrs USA says despite tensions in the Holy Land, pastors are united in their gospel mission. Pray for Christ's justice and peace. And this week, an international conference in the West Bank is offering Christians a space to talk about biblical justice and mercy. Reverend Dr. Jack Serra is the president of Bethlehem Bible College. He says it's been so encouraging to have international Christian leaders and pastors come to speak, learn, and hear the stories of Palestine Christians. Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with Rick, we're examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. As I said at the outset of the program, we're in Israel. We are excited. And Rick, when we landed, I noticed a change, really a subdued nature of people just because of what they have gone through in the last 7 months. And Rick, I mean, you know, as you and I have been, we've gone to the sites, we've gone to each location. People are happy to see us. What are some of your observations while we've been here?
Well, Jimmy, I feel the same way. And you know, there have been certain times we've been coming here so many times. We have friends in many different areas, the sites that we go to. And we regularly go to some sites and we get to know even the people like the security guards. And Jimmy, I've never seen anything like it. Security guards were coming up and hugging you. They recognized you from so many trips. They were saying, Brother James, we've missed you. People we didn't even know they knew our name. They were so grateful and excited to see us. I think it kind of represents maybe a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to getting through this and potentially seeing the other side and a return to being normal.
We're going to talk about why that is important, at least for the body of Christ. Now, we're not trying to put together trips, and we want to encourage you to come to the land of Israel to see Israel. And we're going to investigate that on the rest of the program today. As a matter of fact, Rick, we've got Winky Medad stated by. Let's go to our good friend, Winky Medad.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Winky Medad with us. It's typically a long-distance phone call when I call Winky, but today, even though he's on the phone, it's a local call. I'm calling from Jerusalem, Winky in Shiloh. Winky, of course, the former mayor of Shiloh and a trusted broadcast partner that we trust to bring insight to us from the land of Israel. As always, Winky, thank you for being on the program today.
Oh, thank you once again for having me on. It just reminds me that the most important thing about Jerusalem is that when you pray to God, it's a local call.
That's right. It's normally long distance. He still hears it, but from here, it's a local call. Well, Winky, it's so good to be here back in the land, and that's what I wanted to start off talking to you with. We have been traveling around the country. Tourism since October 7th, understandably, has almost been completely erased. But we aren't the only tour group in the land. We've started to see some of the people. We've seen all of our old friends that we know along the way. And I'll just have to tell you, Winky, there has been such a warm reception. There's always a warm reception, but this time it's a little bit different. They appreciate us being in the land. So if I could, what I wanted to ask you is, first of all, we know tourism is important to Israel, both financially, economically, but also kind of in creating PR for Israel. But then just the psychological component of people coming to visit Israel and support Israel during that time. Could you talk about those two facets of us being in Israel right now?
Well, my first reaction, of course, is we've always believed for the past 70 years or more that anybody really wants to understand, first of all, what Israelis are all about and what the situation is in a political, diplomatic sense, have to be here, even if it's a week, even if it's 10 days, even just to get to know the country, how relatively small it is, and the topography, the hills, the plains, the seashore to the Green Line, from the Green Line to the Jordan River, all sorts of things don't make sense if you're only reading your newspaper or watching television. So that's important. The second thing, of course, is that when you mention, like, psychologically, I've been giving it some thought recently, and I saw an article by a friend of mine which sort of put things in perspective. Most Israelis expected, if not sympathy, a little bit of understanding after October 7th. Mm-hmm. And to make the long story short, it sort of just like dissipated and then it almost disappeared after 2 to 3 months. I mean, we faced the most horrific, bestial attack that we faced maybe in the entire history of the state on that day. We're trying to root out terror, not only for ourselves, but I think also for a lot of the Western world. And we're not getting that much empathy or sympathy in these recent days, and ending up, just as we begin to talk now, about the recognition of a Palestine state as if it's some sort of reward, only not realizing that the more independent a Palestine is, the more possibility of further Hamas attacks, in addition to Fatah attacks, will occur.
Well, we're going to talk about several of those subjects that you just brought up. But before I continue on, I wanted to just bring you one more thing that I've noticed while I'm in the land. And, you know, it's certainly, maybe it is starting to fade from the collective consciousness, like you just said, of those in other parts of the world and in America as well. But in Israel, I went to the mall. I needed to get something in Tiberias last night. I was there, and there was streaming pictures of those hostages that are still remaining. Every overpass that we drive through, it's a hashtag, bring them home now. You see that everywhere, even in restaurants. And anywhere you go, you see these pictures of these hostages that are held. And if you look at the psychology, this is a very real trauma, understandably so, but a very real trauma that Israel is facing. And this is something I shouldn't have underestimated, but I feel like I did underestimate it. The hostages that are there, that is something that is very much in every Israeli's mind right now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it just proves, of course, how much we are a people, that despite the fact we come from backgrounds, and we're only talking at the present moment, of course, we're only talking about 130 to maybe 140 people. The whole country is mobilized and with the families and expressing anguish and hope. And if I may add, those people trying to utilize and even exploit the situation with the hostages against the government by trying to renew anti-government demonstrations that were the agenda of the day before October 7th are being looked on with I even think anger and anguish that they are trying to do this again, because everybody is feeling for them, knowing, of course, that Hamas is not going to give up these hostages like that. It has to be some sort of military combined with political diplomatic moves. But it's not going to be just a one-sided effort.
Well, I appreciate you doing that, putting that in perspective as we look at this situation. But it does give you an insight into the mind of the average Israeli. Well, continuing to talk about that October 7th attack, the bestial attack that you called it, and the taking of those hostages, there has been reports out this week, a lot of people asking the question, could October 7th have been prevented? What did people know? When did they know it? If you could you give us your take on that question?
That question is split into two sections. One is, and both of them are going to be investigated, and we really don't know the answers because they're not talking. Okay, the first aspect is, how could the army, with all the information it had, get itself into a situation that, A, it was literally asleep. I mean, we had heads of Army intelligence get a phone call around midnight and then go back to sleep, okay? And totally unprepared the day before by letting, hundreds and hundreds of soldiers off for the holiday without taking any sort of precautions or leaving plans in place for an immediate call-up within an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. People were left in rooms completely without help or salvation for hours until the Army organized itself. The people who were on the ground were overwhelmingly volunteers who just picked up their guns from their homes and came down south. The second aspect, of course, is, was the Army a prisoner, quote unquote, of a conception or a conceptualization that Hamas was deterred? And how did that happen? I mean, between you and me, Rick, right? You all saw the, and I think everybody listening to me saw some of the clips. You saw hundreds of these Hamas terrorists come across the border in white, I don't know if you call them Jeeps, I'm not quite sure exactly what the name of the vehicle is, you know, these white back trucks, open up trucks, right? Where'd they get them from? They have an automobile factory in Gaza City? Or did they come through the border from Egypt in tunnels that, and you can't, okay, I can see, you know, people sneaking through, marijuana going out, you know, all sorts of things like that. But these vehicles, these sort of semi-jeeps, where'd they come from? But people missed them on the Egyptian side of the border. They didn't come through from Israel, I can tell you right now. So there are a lot of things that have to be answered. And the most important thing was that the Army's general command was not prepared with any sort of emergency response, even if they claimed they could not foretell exactly what was happening, which I don't believe.
Well, I'm certain that those questions will continue to be asked, and we'll be talking about that far into the future on this catastrophic failure to prevent this attack. But we'll talk about that more. But let's continue to talk about the attack itself. And one area I wanted to go is the international perception of this attack. Now, the International Criminal Court this week, looking at this situation, unbelievably issued arrest warrants for Hamas, but also for Prime Minister Netanyahu and high-ranking government officials, Defense Minister Gallant, different people, basically equating these two people and saying these people are responsible for war crimes. Now, this is an unbelievable, in my opinion, comparison between these two entities. If you could you talk a little bit about that and what it says about at least parts of the international community?
Well, first of all, they did not define Hamas as an aggressor, someone who initiated the activities. All they said was Hamas also committed crimes, okay? But the crimes that Israel is accused of simply did not happen. We are not committing genocide. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are civilian casualties, and yes, there were civilian casualties in Dresden, Germany during World War II, and in Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II, okay, and in Iraq, and in a few, Syria, and in a few other places that certain countries, including the United States, were involved in, okay? So we're talking about in war, in a built-up urban area, you are going to have civilian casualties, unless, like Israel is now doing with Rafah, right, is evacuating the vast majority of the people there. Secondly, there is no starvation. I mean, you probably follow the news almost as much as I do. Mm-hmm. How many times have you heard they're starving? There's a famine. Even Blinken said it, okay? Have you seen people starving to death? Have you seen hundreds or even thousands of people falling off their feet in the middle of the street? I mean, they got a lot of cameras still in Gaza. I still haven't seen that. Okay, and it goes on and on. All these criminal accusations simply do not exist. They're progressive talk making up new definitions for genocide, making up new definitions for lack of humanitarian aid. Okay? I can tell you this week, the United States stopped the humanitarian aid from being distributed that's coming off the floating pier that the United States built. Why? Because Hamas and a few criminal families are stealing it. Not Israel, Hamas. So the story is like, oh, we have to get Israel, let's make up things. And that's what we're facing. Okay, I'm not going to say this is sort of to my Jewish ears, okay, Rick, right? Mm-hmm. Things have been made up about Jews in the past, you know, wells and bloodletting and usury and all sorts of other things throughout the ages, which really didn't exactly happen. But people believe them, and Jews suffered from that. And we're seeing a little bit of a new type of form of this type of ancient anti-Semitism that points the finger at the Jew, this time for political advantage rather than either religious beliefs or economic opportunities.
Well, one final question for you, Winky, and you've addressed this earlier, and this kind of brings to a point what we've been talking about. Part of these October 7th attacks, it's come to the point now where there are additional European countries, major European countries, Spain, Ireland, Norway, that are insisting on recognizing a Palestinian state. There has never been a Palestinian state. Israel has offered the Palestinians a state of their own, and it has been denied because in their eyes it has not been enough. And we look at this situation, you mentioned it earlier, this is a reward for that October 7th attack for those Hamas terrorists. Can you talk about how that situation is playing in Israel and how this is such a slap in the face for Israel, isn't it?
Let me put it this way. Hamas definitely cannot run a state. They're not interested in a state. The only state they're interested in is Israel. That should be non-existent. But here in Israel, since you asked about it, we know that two polls have been run in the Palestinian Authority area, and about 80%, between 75 and 80% of the population there supported and continue to support the October 7th operation. Okay, so we got Hamas, which we can't reward, right? And we got Fatah, or the PLO, or the Palestinian Authority, whatever you want to call it, right? Which whose population is pro-October 7th. What do you think Israelis are thinking about these educated, enlightened, quote-unquote, European countries now that are beginning to recognize something called Palestine, which can only bring about more war, more terror, more violence, more instability? It's as if people do not think anymore. They have an agenda, an ideological post-Marxist progressive woke agenda, and they will not be deterred by facts or reality. And it's shocking.
It certainly is. And we've been talking to Winky Madad. He's our broadcast partner who comes to us, who shares insights. He's a former mayor of Shiloh. He's a man who understands the history and the politics of Israel. And he comes on our program to share with us. We appreciate you doing that every week. Winky, we are excited and happy to be back in Israel right now talking to you. We look forward to coming back to Israel. We might see you on this trip. If we don't see you on this trip, hopefully we will see you on the next trip. But we appreciate talking to you. We appreciate you coming and sharing with our listeners, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much once again for having me on the program. Goodbye to you and our listeners.
Winky Madad is that gentleman that we always go to in Israel that does help us to see things clearly, at least hear them clearly, so that we can, in our own minds, decide who is telling the truth and the facts don't lie, as he said. Well, we're in Israel. We said that at the outset of the program, and we're super excited about what we are seeing here. A lot of emotions run through us. I'm bringing to our microphones on the program today our broadcast partner, Jack, the Navy SEAL that has been with us several times on the program. Jack, welcome to the program.
Jim, it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Jack, so we thought about this, and you really encouraged me and gave the emphasis to really to for us to get to Israel. You felt it was important that we get there. Now, we have felt that too, but sometimes unless you have that motivating factor, you know, so what, you know, just asking you, why did you want to come to the land at this time?
Well, Jim, it's really a two-part question, and it originally goes back to just how I've benefited personally from the countless times I've been here and the accurate biblical teaching. Combining that with being on the ground, it puts the puzzle pieces together in a way that you just can't do unless you see it. We all know the phrase, a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, is being on the ground worth a thousand pictures? So we had this desire months and months ago prior to October 7th, and for the purposes of bringing, in particular, younger pastors and leaders of the church so that they could be get on the ground and see, understand with the historical context, the traditional context, of course, applying the scriptures throughout and predominantly to get that entire puzzle picture.
Jack, just listening to you talk, it makes me so excited that you, I feel so honored to have you as my friend and someone that served our country, and to hear you talk about biblical foundation and the things that are important, that is great. And before October 7th did happen, we were going to bring your pastors, a couple of other people in the church. We ended up bringing a fellow state trooper, a gentleman that will be on the program later with us, and yourself. You've been in wartime situations. We're in Israel during a wartime situation. Do you feel like we're in a wartime situation?
That's a terrific question, Jim. And the quick answer to that is no. In all the times I've been to Israel and spent countless days on the ground working and living in Israel, this feels virtually almost no different than it has over the years that I've been here. The only slight change would be the somewhat noticeable absence of tourism in the tourist in the popular tourist locations, historical locations. The other item to note would be the genuine appreciation from the Israeli citizens throughout the country. They're genuinely thankful that we are here. And that was one of the main reasons that we wanted to come, was to be on the ground, get the truth from the citizens on the ground, but also to show our support for the people of Israel. As Christians, we go back to the scriptures, once again, looking through the lens of scriptures, and at the very beginning, Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee. And so the blessing is for us to show our support to the people of Israel, God's chosen people. And once you're here and you're on the ground, you get what we used to call in the military a concept of operations. We understand much clearer the entire scripture from Genesis to Revelation. We have, to use a different phrase, the overview. And once you understand that overview, you see that God's chosen people are intricately in the center of the Bible. And frankly, Jim, I think the truth of it is, if you get your understanding of Israel wrong, you don't understand the gospel.
Yes, exactly. And you and I have had some opportunities to have some great discussions. You have a couple people on this trip that you brought with you that have never been here but have a love for Israel. And we've had those theological discussions. And like you said, when we go to sites and we're the only people on those sites, when we're used to seeing thousands, I mean, you know, literally hundreds of people on a site while we're there, and you don't see anybody, it is important. And don't you think it's important that people start to think about coming back and being an ambassador, first of all, of what a Christian ambassador to the people of Israel, but then taking back the information that they see while they're here?
I couldn't agree more with you, Jim. I think we're the church, the Western church, the church in America, what we would refer to as Christendom in general, is long behind the power curve with speaking about Israel. for decades and generations now, we've been too silent on the integral part that Israel has in God's plan. He has a plan for Israel and a plan for the church. I've heard it described that Israel is God's time clock. We look at the entire nation as the hour hand, Jerusalem, the capital, as the minute hand, and then the Temple Mount as the second hand. When we keep that in mind with our biblical lenses on, we see the times that we're in. And we know how Jesus rebuked the Pharisees for not understanding the times that they were in. Let us not be those people.
Wow. Jack, will you say that again? Now give us that time clock that you're talking about. That is phenomenal.
We can look at Israel as God's time clock, the entire nation of Israel as the hour hand. And then we scroll in to Jerusalem, the capital, the center of the nations, as Ezekiel 5:5 says. We see Jerusalem as the minute hand. And then we scroll down to the minute little patch of ground called the Temple Mount, where that is the second hand. Israel is God's time clock. As Jerusalem goes, so goes the world. So we need to encourage, as congregants, we need to encourage our pastors to speak the truth about Israel. We know that prophecy is one third of the Bible. If we're not speaking the entire counsel of God's word, 2 Timothy 3:16, all scripture is inspired by God and profitable. If we're not preaching and speaking and learning and discipling in one third of the Bible, then we're wrong and we don't have the entire concept of God's plan for the three strands of the human family.
Jack, and I've got to tell folks, Jack has been a part of our school of prophets for a long time. You studied, and I don't know if you got that from us or you developed this yourself, but you are phenomenal, and that is a great. I'm going to use that illustration, Jack. When I go to churches, that illustration of Israel is a time clock. The nation of Israel is the clock. The Jewish people is the hour hand. The city of Jerusalem is the minute hand. Yeah. And then zero in on the Temple Mount, and that is the second hand.
That's correct, Jim. We need to keep our eyes on the Jewish people and always remember they are, as Zechariah 1 and 2 says, the Lord says, I am zealous and jealous for my people. They are the apple of God's eye. Let us not be the enemies of Israel, but the ones that continue to bless and support and to remember that as Jewish people, they are lost and need the gospel just as much as any Gentile.
Mm. Jack, thank you so much. Folks, I want you to pray for Jack because I think he's got, he just doesn't know it yet, but he could teach and he could preach. And he's still working in the security industry. He's out there. He's still very active. But one of these days, God's going to put him in the pulpit and he's going to have a ministry like no other. Jack, thank you for being with us on this trip in Israel and for encouraging us to be here. And we're in Jerusalem right now doing this. And I feel so honored to be with you, brother.
Jim, thank you so much for this opportunity. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to the next time we can literally be here in Jerusalem doing the same thing.
Folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're the Legacy Series with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung. Still in the book of Zechariah, and we love listening to that. I know that Jack listens to the program every week. Hope you do too. We'll be right back here in Jerusalem with Prophecy Today Weekend. Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. You know, this week we're coming from Israel. Rick, I'm excited about it. And we've got a small group of people with us. We just really were coming on a fact-finding trip, trying to make some contacts, put some people in contact with others. But I'm looking forward, when we do a look at the book, to our good friends, Scott and Daniel, who will be on the program with us.
That's right, Jimmy. Scott and Daniel, a father and his son. And if you remember, Jimmy, the last time I was in Israel, I had a group of over 60 homeschoolers and their parents. And it's such a special time. That's a great time to introduce your children to all kinds of things. But introducing them to Israel, making the Bible come alive to them at that young age is such a great opportunity and chance to give those young people perspective as they go forth into the world.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to Scott and Daniel about that. The Legacy Series. This week, we're continuing to look at the book of Zechariah. And this week, we'll look at the two other horses, the white horse and the speckled horse, there in Zechariah chapter 1. Remember, Zechariah is apocalyptic literature, just like Daniel, Ezekiel, and Revelation. The Lord uses symbols to communicate absolutes. That's what we study today. Please take your Bible and let's go to Zechariah chapter 1, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series.
And then he turns and he sees, hey, there's a white horse and a red horse and there's a speckled horse. White horse, Jesus rides in out of the heavenlies. We come with him on white horses, Revelation 19, 11 and following. The white horse, probably it's referring to victory. The red horse, again, blood or battle. Victory through battles, and the speckled horse, part red, part white. Victory in fighting. Victory from fighting. And the red horseman comes in, and he's coming to the Gentiles. He's coming to these Gentiles first. Why? Why is he coming to the Gentiles? Look what it says as he continues on. Verse 11, they said, and the angel of the Lord who stood upon the myrtle trees, he said, we have walked to and fro through the earth, and behold, all the earth sitteth still and is at rest. The Gentiles are in charge, and supposedly there's a peace on the earth. Then said the angel of the Lord, and he answered and said, O Lord, now he's talking to the Lord of hosts. See, there it is, that phrase, 52 times it's used. O Lord of hosts, O Lord Almighty, God the Father, how long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem? Who's going to be giving problems to Jerusalem? Only the Gentile people, not the Jews. That's their city. And so the Gentiles, when are you going to have mercy on Jerusalem, Father? They've just come through 70 years of terrible time. Under who? The Gentiles. Verse 13, and the Lord answered the angel that talked with me with good words and a comfortable words. So the angel that communed with me said to me, Zechariah, tell them this. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, thus saith God Almighty, I am jealous for Jerusalem. I am jealous for my city. I am jealous for Zion. Look what he says here in verse 15. And I am very sore displeased with the heathen. That word can be translated Gentiles, are the rest of the peoples of the earth, not Jewish people. I'm sore displeased with these heathen. Why? They are at ease. For I was a little bit displeased with the Jewish people. I allowed the Gentiles to come to power. I was a little bit displeased with those Jews. They didn't obey me. They were disobedient. They wouldn't do what I told them to do. So I allowed the Gentiles to come to power. I was going to let the Gentiles do some things, but look what he says here. I'm a little bit displeased, and they helped forward the affliction. That's a phrase that could be translated, and basically they intensified their affliction on the Jewish people. I'm jealous for Jerusalem. These Gentiles have been brought up to destroy Jerusalem. If they can destroy Jerusalem, they can wipe the Jewish people off the face of the earth. I was displeased with them, and I brought them up, but these Gentiles took it too far. They forwarded the affliction. They intensified that judgment more than I wanted it to be. Look at verse 16. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, I will return to Jerusalem with mercies. He's going to do it. The plea from the angel of the Lord, from Jesus Christ himself. Father says, I'm going to return to Jerusalem with mercy. Second thing, my house shall be built in it. The temple of God is going to be built in the city of Jerusalem. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. I mean, who else said it? Nobody but the Lord of hosts. Look at what he says. The next thing he says, and a line shall be stretched forth upon Jerusalem. Now we'll study that, which is one of the visions to the nation of Israel, to the Jewish people in the city of Jerusalem. A line. I'm going to set up a barrier for the city of Jerusalem. It's going to be a certain size. Ezekiel tells us how large it's going to be. It's going to be the central city of the world. It's, you see, Jerusalem is the key to all. Peace, especially, but it's the key to everything. I'm going to set it up. I'm going to measure it. Look right up here in the verse 17. Cry yet, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts. There it is again. My cities, here's number four thing he's going to do. My cities through prosperity shall yet be spread abroad. I'm going to set up prosperity for the Jewish people. You see, it says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem in Psalm. You know what it says in Isaiah? Pray for the preeminence and the prominence of the city of Jerusalem. Isaiah 61, pray for the preeminence and the prominence of the city of Jerusalem. So you pray for the peace, the preeminence, and the prominence of the city. He says, I'm going to give prosperity to my people. Look what the fifth thing he says. And the Lord shall yet comfort Zion. The word Zion means the same as Jerusalem. It's a synonym for Jerusalem. Zion and Jerusalem are the same thing. And then the last thing, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. I am going to reach in and choose Jerusalem. Those people can debate all day in the United Nations, in Washington, D.C., in Jerusalem, Israel. They can talk about it all they want to. I have chosen Jerusalem. I'm going to come back there and show it mercy. And I'm going to put my temple there. And I'm going to measure its boundaries. And I'm going to make it prosperous. You Gentiles, you intensified your judgment upon my people too much. So I'm going to bring judgment upon you. That's why. Who? We'll look at the next vision. Verse 18. The next vision that he lays out here for us. Then lifted I up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, what be these? And he answered me, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. Now we're going to find out who they are. But you're seeing, they're the ones that come oppressing Israel, Jerusalem, and Israel. Verse 20, and the Lord showed me four carpenters. Now we have four horns and four carpenters, or four smiths. Then said I, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these, the four carpenters, are come to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles. There it is. The horns now, defined by apocalyptic literature, by the continuing vision that God gives to Zechariah, the horns are the Gentiles that are lifted up over the land of Judah and tried to scatter them. And so now we have four horns and we have four carpenters. Remember what it says in the book of Daniel chapter 7, the vision that God gives to Daniel that night? And it's the four beasts that come forth, the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the fierce beast. And then he defines that vision. Because the fierce beast has 10 horns. And verse 24 of Daniel chapter 7 says, though 10 horns are 10 Gentile world leaders that come to power in the last days. Chapter 17 of the book of Revelation, verse 12 talks about horns. It's again 10 horns, not 4, but 10. But every time you see horns in prophetic literature, by the way, 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 20 says, all prophecy is of no private interpretation. It all must be coordinated. Daniel, Ezekiel, Zechariah, and Revelation must mesh together. And the horns he's talking about here are the Gentile world powers. What is he just saying? I'm going to get on you Gentiles who tried to destroy Israel, to devastate the Jew, to damage the city of Jerusalem. Then he says, you four, the four Gentile world powers that Daniel saw in chapter 2 in the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. The gold head, the Babylonian Empire. Chapter 7, the lion, the Babylonian Empire. Chapter 2 of Daniel, the chest of and arms of silver, the Medo-Persian Empire. Chapter 7, it was the bear, the Medo-Persian Empire. Chapter 2, the belly of brass. Chapter 7, the leopard, the Grecian Empire. And I don't have time to explain all these. Every one of them are self-explanatory if you look and get the information there. And then the legs of iron and feet of iron and clay. And then the fierce beast of chapter 7 with the 10 horns, the Roman Empire. He said, these four are going to come and try to destroy the Jewish people. The Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire and the Roman Empire and its revised edition. You like that? Now, look at what's going to happen. And he's going to raise up four carpenters. And these carpenters are going to go after the horns, and they're going to destroy the horns. What does that mean? The four carpenters, a carpenter, what does he do? He comes in and takes that which is there and builds it up. The carpenters. Well, you got the Babylonian Empire. What happened? First carpenter, Medo-Persian Empire. Come in and defeat the Babylonians in one night in the city of Babylon. Shutting off the water north and south of the Euphrates River. Walking under the walls. Walking in to this impregnable city. And the Medes and the Persians defeat the Babylonians. That's the first carpenter. Second carpenter, the Grecian Empire, under Alexander the Great, defeats the Medo-Persian Empire. At 32 years of age, Alexander conquers the known world. By the way, chapter 7 of the book of Daniel talks about the leopard had four wings because the Grecian Empire divided into four parts after Alexander the Great's death at 32 years of age. Died a syphilis and a drunk in the city of Babylon at 32 years old. But they had captured the Medo-Persian Empire. The Grecian Empire, 63 BC, under the Romans. The Roman Empire is established. It sets up an infrastructure. It gives a common language to the known world. It has some kind of consistency as far as governing the people. It was essential. Galatians 4:4 says, in the fullness of time, God brought forth the Messiah when there was a road system set up, when there was a common language to preach the gospel, when there was some kind of semblance of peace in the earth under the Roman Empire. So the Romans defeat the Grecians. And then the revised Roman Empire comes into existence. Remember what it says in Daniel? Daniel chapter 2. That image of the man that Nebuchadnezzar saw, a stone came and destroyed that image and broke it up into little pieces. And the wind blew it away like the dust. That stone, Jesus Christ. It's interpreted in chapter 2 of Daniel. You can read it in verse 40 to 44, I think it is, where he says that stone, the Messiah, Jesus Christ comes and he sets up. That's what Zechariah is talking about. One of the themes of Zechariah, the Messiah who is coming. And that last carpenter, isn't it interesting? The last carpenter. I stood the other day there at Nazareth on the edge of the mountain. If you've ever been to Nazareth, you can stand looking out across the Jezreel Valley. And I'm sure that carpenter walked out there many times on that little ledge where I stood there overlooking the Jezreel Valley in Nazareth. Center stage where the last act is going to take place. And I'm sure that carpenter, that stone, contemplated what it would be like one day. He's the fourth carpenter that comes. Zechariah sees it and he gives the prophecy.
What a thought. Can you imagine the Lord Jesus Christ standing in his hometown of Nazareth, looking over the Jezreel Valley and knowing what will happen in that place? I want to invite you to come back again next week as we continue our study in Zechariah of the 10 visions. Please join us next week.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series. We've got to take a break, and when we come back, a look at the book with Rick and a father and son right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. Toothless arrest warrants sought by the International Criminal Court caused problems for Israel abroad. Earlier this week, the ICC's top prosecutor accused top Israeli and Hamas leaders of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Meanwhile, conditions in Gaza continue to deteriorate after 6 months of war. Believers have little choice but to leave. Uncharted Ministries' Tom Doyle says,
they're just tired. Many of the people are saying, we're finished. We can't live this way anymore. I was just talking with a Christian leader in Gaza, and he said that there were 900 known Christians in Gaza. Now it's down to 700. They expect that it's going to be cut in half at least to 450.
Pray for the war in Gaza to end. Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. And although the gospel of Christ will never change, Christians have to approach different cultures in unique ways. TWR Motion, a division of Transworld Radio, creates animated content to reach spiritual seekers. Today, they're working on a 20-video Bible story series tailored to reach Buddhists. There's been a steep learning curve compared to their recent video series geared toward Muslims. Candace Mackey with TWR Motion explains,
Islam is a little bit closer to what we're used to. There's a lot of bridges to the gospel with Old Testament prophets. Sacrifice is very much something that they understand. But for Buddhist people, it's been really tricky to understand their worldview because it's just so different than ours.
This gospel series won't be done till 2025, but you can help bring it to the finish line through prayer for the team. There's more at our website. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. This month, Sat7, a Christian satellite television ministry to the region, offers a free 7-day prayer guide that provides specific ways to pray and tells the stories of Christians who can't freely worship. Get yours when you click on the banner ad at missionnews.org. I'm Ruth Kramer.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. One of the things that we love on this program is people that listen to the program, that know about us, decide to come on a trip to Israel. Now, again, Rick, we're not doing this as a plug for a trip to Israel, although I think everybody should come here, especially men and women that look to teach God's word. Their lives will be, you know, just their study life, just understanding the culture and the times in which Jesus lived and the land itself, all of that is so very important. But we thought it would be important that you hear this from the words of two of the guests that were on the trip with us. And that would be Scott and Daniel. They come from Maine. They're here with us on the trip, Rick. And you recorded at the Western Wall just before Shabbat. You spent a little time with them, asking why it was so important for Scott to bring his son Daniel on this trip.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I'm here in the Western Wall Plaza. You can hear the wind blowing by. We are recording this on Shabbat, before Shabbat has begun. We're recording it on Friday. And I'm here with two new friends of mine, Scott and his son Daniel. They are here on our trip. Guys, how have you been enjoying your trip so far?
Oh, it's been fantastic.
Very good. It's been really, just really good trip so far.
Well, we have been having an excellent time and no problems at all. It's really been a blessing for us to be here. Scott, the first thing I wanted to ask you, your son, Daniel, we just heard from him. He is 18 years old, just graduated, getting ready to go to Bible school. What, in your mind, made you feel like it was so important to bring your son here to experience the land of Israel?
Well, as a believer, it's good to come to Israel to see all the things that Jesus did and where he was. Like you said earlier during our trip, to take the black and white Bible that we read and it turns into living color. And I think it's important for him as he embarks on his journey, not only as an adult, but as an aspiring minister of some sort. He hasn't decided yet, but I can see that happening in his future as he goes to Bible college. And so it just gives him a foundation that he can really remember on and just reflect on. And honestly, I know it will prompt him, and it will certainly prompt me to really dig into my Bible even more so now that I've been here.
Certainly will never read your Bible the same way. Well, Daniel, you're 18 years old, and as we said, you're getting ready to head to Bible school, maybe to go into the ministry, not exactly sure
what you're going to do. You're still praying about that. But as you've traveled through the land of the Bible here, and as you've seen all these many sites, can you tell us what's impacted you the most? What has made this trip special for you?
Yeah, what's really impacted me the most is just, as my dad said, just seeing everything, you know, putting names to places and seeing everything, not exactly how as it was, you know, it's been thousands of years, but seeing where everything is in the Sea of Galilee and just being in the place, and even like what the weather would have been like for that biblical time, and just like little things like that, and just as my dad just said, putting everything into color and putting it into perspective, it's been really great, and I'm really looking forward to the rest of the trip.
Well, we at Prophecy Day, we feel like every believer should make at least one trip to Israel. As you can look, it'll change the way you read the Bible. It'll change the way you understand things. Again, like Daniel just said, it puts things into perspective. Well, guys, thank you so much. We've still got a few days left here to experience the land of Israel. Look forward to spending more time with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick, for leading us on our journey.
Oh, what a great interview, Rick. I love how we talk to people and we just get them live. And I know the wind was in the background. You could hear kids playing around. But what were your thoughts, and why is it important to you that people come to the land of Israel right now?
Well, Jimmy, my thoughts go back to the last couple of programs we've done. We talked to Menno Kalischer, and he talked about the importance of the Jewish people and how we watch the Jewish people. We get rid of any other nation, heaven forbid, the Bible is not changed. But if you get rid of the Jewish people, then the Bible is what Menno said, yesterday's news. We look at it, we talk about to these people this week as we go through the land. We hear Jack talking to us earlier today, talking about the Jewish people and the nation of Israel being God's timepiece. And we can know, this is what we talk about in this program, we can know God's plan and when it's about to happen. And we can use that to motivate us. That's what we're doing here. And that's why we do this program.
You know, I'm very thankful, Rick, that our good friend Jack came along with us on this trip. We were trying to decide what we should do about going to the land of Israel. He really encouraged us to do this. It's a good time to be here. You and I both saw people that are grateful that we're here. Very few tourists that are here. It is a wartime situation. We are watching those things. We haven't felt threatened at all. The people are, and I think one of the things that I thought was that I talked on another program that people are turning to God. People are looking for answers as to what happened. What better time to come and bless the nation, the people of Israel? I know it's probably still a sketchy area. Most people would think about that. And we did run into a few groups that were small, that were supposed to be bigger, but their family said, "Why in the world would you go to Israel?" Well, we have felt fine here, and I think the encouragement, not only to us as you and I, we were encouraged, but hopefully we encourage the people that are here, the Jewish people, those that are our friends that we see and talk to on a regular basis throughout the year.
Jimmy, I certainly do think that is important. We've had some great conversations as we continue to learn from them, learn the situation, learn what's going on. But Jimmy, I agree with you. We've been talking to people and they've said, come back. We'll keep you safe. Come to Israel. Continue to come. We want to do that. We want to continue to bless Israel, bless God's chosen people as we continue our ministry here at Prophecy Today.
Yes. Thanks, Rick, for being on the program. It's been a whirlwind trip for us. And what we want you to do is to pray for the Jewish people. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Pray that the Lord's will be done in this land, not only here, but around the world. And if you don't know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, you have never accepted Him. It's as easy as ABC. Admit that you're a sinner. Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and call upon His name and you will be saved. Rick, with so much is happening, I get excited because I think the rapture of the church could happen at any moment. Until it does, we're going to keep looking up. Until.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Jay Johnson inviting you to join us again next week for more of Prophecy Today.